WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. That's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth,
very
Charlie
good.
Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome to Monday Night Talk. My name is Kevin Tachi. Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to the program, our first program of 2021. It's like things are renewed. There's a sense of hope. Let's see what happens in the next couple of weeks and see if we can retain that hope for the new year, that things will continue on an even keel. I have a great lineup for you this evening. We start the first hour off back-to-back state representatives. As you may or may not know, there is a new speaker in the House of Representatives up on Beacon Hill, as Speaker DeLeo has stepped aside, stepped down, moving on into the private sector, and taking his place, elected, chosen via caucus, his peers. We have Speaker, I think he represents the Quincy area. We have State Rep Rob Mariano. He is now Speaker Mariano. And so what I did is I did a take from a couple of state reps here from the South Shore, a Republican and a Democrat, get their take on it, because we'll talk about other things that won't be the main focus, but the primary focus, at least to start out each segment, is to talk a little bit about the new speaker and how he will match, how will he be different. And so we have Dave DeCoste will be our very first guest of the new year. We'll get his take on that and also kind of take a look ahead for 2021 for Rep. DeCoste. We also have, I think he's one of the longer tenured state reps of the South Shore. There may be a couple of others who might have been in office longer, but we go with State Rep. Josh Cutler. He'll join us. We'll get his take about the new speaker. We'll also talk with him about signing the police reform bill that was signed by the governor last week. We'll get his take on that. Hour number two, we will speak with Brockton City Councilor Wynn Falwell. We'll talk with Wynn Falwell about a couple of different things. Councilor can touch upon how things were from the city council point of view, dealing with the pandemic. Some of the latest issues in the city of Brockton, whether it's economic development or, hey, should we add another retail adult marijuana, an adult recreation marijuana retail outlet in the city? And what should the process be? Is it flawed? We'll talk to them about that. And then we'll close things out. We'll speak with Alex Bazanson. Alex, who's the chairman of the Plymouth County Democratic League. We'll get his take on everything from local races to what now with 2021. Do we have any local races to watch for, whether it's cities or towns? The governor's race, does that start now in 2021? Do we hear candidates jumping in? And could Charlie Baker be running for a third term? We'll talk about stuff like that coming up with Alex Bazanza. Right now, though, time for us to do a final check of the roadways. Being brought to you by Brennan's Smoke Shop. Online at brennansmokeshopme.com. With locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Pond, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Thanks, Kevin. I've been keeping an eye on a breakdown on Route 3 in Weymouth, and this report is brought to you by Zevia. It's on the southbound side before Derby Street, and it's in the active breakdown lane, so it's making it tough for traffic to merge left and get by the scene. Right now, Route 3 southbound volume is locked up from Route 18 down past that breakdown. But elsewhere, Route 3 is all clear. No other issues to worry about. It's a great ride on the expressway. No issues from Boston to Braintree and back. And the lower end of 93, that's all clear both ways to Route 24. As for 24 southbound, 95 southbound, they're doing fine down into Rhode Island, and 495 is in great shape. Looking for a beverage that is full of flavor and fun with no bad stuff? With Zevia, you can have it all. Craveable flavors, refreshing choices, always zero sugar and zero calories. Zevia, live your best. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Renee Hamilton in the WATD Traffic Center.
Hey, it's Jeff from Brennan's Smoke Shop. Having a hard time with your New Year's resolution? Well, I have a couple of really good ones for you. If you like to drink alcohol, maybe you should resolve never to drive drunk. If you don't like to drink, you could resolve to always wear your seatbelt while traveling in your car. This message is brought to you by Brennan's Smoke Shop. Brennan's Smoke Shop wishing you a happy and safe New Year. And always wear your seatbelt. Always.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Well, thank you for staying tuned to the first segment of Monday Night Talk. The first one of 2021. And I will tell you there were a lot of candidates to be the first guest of 2021. And I might add also that this is a little bit of a benchmark for the radio program itself, because I believe, looking back at all the data, that this is the 10-year anniversary of when I took over Monday Night Talk, or not took over, but the baton, the microphone was handed from then State Senator Bob Hedlund, who is now mayor of Weymouth. Handed it over and says, here, you take this show. So this year we will remember back 10 years from time to time. I actually have asked Bob to come on, hopefully in the next week or two he'll join us. But the first guest of 2021 is none other than State Representative Dave DeCoste. As he represents the 5th Plymouth District. Hello, how are you, Representative?
Good, I feel honored now. I feel special. Kevin, thanks for having me. How was your New Year's?
My New Year's was good. It was safe. I made sure I socially distanced. It was just me and my significant other. And it's simple. You know, when you get older, the holidays, you want to keep them as simple but as meaningful as possible.
Yeah, that's a good place. That's a good way to put it, I guess, especially in these days when you can transmit something deadly. And now we've got that new stuff coming over from England. That's even worse.
Yeah. But they say it's not any worse than the COVID. It's just that the transmission rate is a little bit more contagious.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So. You know, you'd be a little extra care. Well, I saw your value in coming on and being the first guest, because we have seen a little bit of a shift in the Massachusetts House as Speaker DeLeo has since stepped down, and you now have a new speaker, I believe the Democrats caucused.
Right.
And you have now a speaker, Mariano.
Right, from the South Shore. From the South Shore.
How does that feel?
Well, you know, it is, I got along fine with Speaker DeLeo. You know, I always thought he was fair in dealing with us. And I know that, you know, Representative, now Speaker Mariano, I think will be, he's a very fair-minded individual. I think it speaks the fact that he was able, even given, you know, some of the, and I think both parties are having a little bit of a tumultuous time, but given the fact that not only did he have support from all but three of the Democrats towards a vote for Speaker, the GOP, by the way, obviously, we vote for our Brad Jones, who was our Republican leader. But he had all but three of the Democrats who supported him. And the folks, Representative Holmes, who everyone had thought was going to challenge him, ended up nominating him for Speaker. So I think he's a very talented politician. And two of his policies that I think might be a little bit different than what we've seen before is, number one, he has always maintained an open door policy. And he's indicated that he's going to continue to do that, which is good. And it is nice that you're able to go in and talk with him. And of course, we have, you know, he represents down in right down from Quincy to Holbrook and Weymouth. So he has interests right down the South Shore from Quincy down south. And he is very familiar with our issues and, you know, everything from transportation to, you know, water quality and the North and South River. He's familiar with it all. So it's not something that he's going to have to look up and learn about because he's already heard about it. And especially the development in Union Point in Weymouth, the former Naval Air Station. He's extremely familiar with that. And hopefully that's one of the changes maybe we can move, because when you take a look, I know you and I have spoken about this, and having retired from the military and seeing what Naval Air Station, you know, Weymouth was, along with Fort Devens. And if you look at the two of them, Fort Devens closed 5 years after Weymouth Naval Air Station. And if you go up to Fort Devens, Kevin, it is running on 16 cylinders. And the progress thus far, the Naval Air Station, I know I hear quite a bit from my constituents in Rockland. They want to get going on that. So I think if there's one thing I could point to that really might, you know, Speaker now, Mariano, might have the ability to move things forward quickly, it would be in that arena.
And do you feel that's one of the attributes that to Speaker Mariano, that's how he's going to differ from Speaker DeLeo, that maybe he'll be a little bit more... I don't want to say anything that's going to be negative in regards to speaking. I want to say, you know, because I feel he left on a high note. But there's definitely going to be stark differences. Is this one of many? Well, stark differences?
I would say, because he has been involved in it for so long, from day one, that again, I think it's probably, and I don't want to speak from, but my guess is, be number one, without question, he's extremely knowledgeable about it. Probably as knowledgeable as anybody in either the House or the Senate. So he comes in, number one, with that. And number two, I think you're going to see, and this is collectively, there's no bipartisan rancor in terms of what needs to be done down there. There's some, you know, there's some differing ideas, but we need to focus on moving forward, because there's a lot that can be done there. And right now, things are static.
You know, what could tend to change? You know, again, everybody has a different managerial style and a different way of doing things. Mm-hmm. Do you feel that Speaker Mariano is going to do things differently, whether it's, you know, the acceptance of bills or debating bills? I know that was one thing that some people were a little disenfranchised from Speaker DeLeo, is that, you know, there's a process where you couldn't necessarily argue certain bills, and there's more of a process to streamline and kind of get it through the process.
Well, he's alluded to that, and that Speaker Mariano might not be as insistent on overwhelming support to bring an issue forward, and might also be more forgiving of you know, Democrats who don't always go along with the Speaker. There was a Representative Atkins, when she did her farewell speech, she mentioned the fact that when she first came, that the board was like a Christmas tree. In other words, it was lit up red and green, with Democrats and Republicans taking sides on either issues. And I hope that might be the case, that you know, we might be in a position where certainly I do my best to work with, and certainly on the South Shore here, I think the Democrats and the Republicans work quite well together. Matter of fact, I talked some of the things I hope to go move on going forward, but you'll see a situation where we don't have to have near unanimous consent before an issue is moved forward.
And if you're just tuning into this particular segment, we are proud to be joined by State Representative Dave DeCoste, representing the 5th Plymouth District, as we're chatting about a new speaker. And I picked the representatives for so many different reasons why I picked him to be on this segment. A, being a Republican, knowing that we have a new speaker, he's knowledgeable in a lot of areas. And I can't tell you how many times that every time we turn around, he's saying, hey, you have some free time, let me pop on the show. That's what is so fantastic about the legislative delegation that we have on the South Shore is that regardless of what stripe you're wearing, whether you're a Democrat or a Republican or an independent, that everybody is willing to come on and talk about the issues and share information with their constituents and other constituents. Who was chosen? Do we have the same name? When you talk about a minority leader, did that change at all, or do we have?
No, I think that you know, Brad Jones has been doing a super job, and his deputy up there, Brad Hill. Again, as a matter of fact, I just talked to Brad Hill this morning regarding some legislation we had to do, and I know it's right after the new year, but we don't drop. We're looking forward for the new year and some things we need to do on that. But I could tell you that we got 100% of the GOP support, and I'm sure he will continue to do that. Oddly enough, because of the 6-day window that we had, you know, there'll be two votes. Speaker Mariano will be, you know, is speaker for the 6-day that we've just finished with, and then, you know, the vote now will continue over the next 2 years.
What are you looking forward to for the next legislative session now that you're basically on the cusp of starting it?
Well, we got a few things, a lot of unfinished business. We, you know, closely monitoring, as you know, the Hanover fireworks, and that seems to be going well, but we will work closely with Joe Colangelo and Hanover Town Administrator and David Delaney, who's chair of the Board of Selectmen, and the other members of the board there. To make sure that it continues to move forward. We're monitoring funds, we're monitoring progress, and we don't want to be in a position where I insert myself as state rep, but we stand by in case they need assistance, if there's anything I can do. North River Commission funding. We'll be working with, as a matter of fact, I've just within the last week talked about Patrick Carney and Representative Josh Cutler. We're going to make sure that the North River Commission is funded. It's a small amount of money that they need every year. I'll tell you that if every bureaucracy in the state ran like the North River Commission, we would be in just golden financial shape. But they are the most fiscally prudent, they are as fiscally prudent as any organization you'll see. And we're going to make sure that the Department of Conservation Recreation, you know, fully funds their needs and commits to fully funding their needs in the future. Because, you know, again, the only scenic waterway federally designated in the state. And the state has committed, I think any plain reading on that law indicates that the state is committed towards to funding them. And again, it's a small amount of money, not even $40,000. So
I'm going to shift my focus from state and local politics to national politics. I know you like to dabble in that area from time to time. Yeah, we're a few short days from seeing, from 2 weeks before we see the swearing in of a new president, a new administration being, a new era being ushered in at least for 4 years. Mm-hmm. What are you watching for as a local leader, a local elected official when it comes to what's happening down in Washington? Will we see the things return to what they were 12 years ago, or do you feel that it's a wait and see type of a mentality?
Well, I mean, you know, it looks like the Republicans will have a very narrow majority in the Senate, and the Democrats will have a very narrow majority in the House. We'll see how President Biden does. You know, as you said, he's, you know, where are we? We're beginning of January. He's going to be sworn in and the 20th. You know, there are many people who think the election was unfair. And many people apparently and many competent people who will have real reservations about fraud and so forth. And I will leave it like that. I hope that the country could focus on elements, areas of agreement and move forward. And to be honest with you, what I am most worried about is the national economy. As you look around here, and I know you and I both, you know, we live within a few miles of each other. You know the number of restaurants that are going down, the number of gymnasiums. Right across the board, people are really in trouble. And, you know, we're relying on, by the way, if I could just say, my local food pantries in Norwell, Hanover, and Rockland, and the St. Vincent de Paul Societies and St. Mary's, St. Helens, the Holy Mother's Collaborative and Holy Family over in Rockland, they have been just terrific. But the number of referrals we've had to make to those you know, to those agencies has just been going up, and it's an area of concern for me. So whatever we can do locally and working with across the aisles, both parties, to get the economy going, to get people back in a secure environment where operating with the, you know, protecting the free enterprise system, and where government can help getting individual business men and women back in business, back in a secure area where they can salvage what you know, what their businesses were, and hopefully develop more. I'm concerned though with the number of small businesses that were here and have gone under and have gone for good.
Yeah, I'm very concerned as well, because they're, you know, those small businesses mean employment. I think they're part of, no matter how big or small a business is, they are part of the economic engine that helps our economy, and it helps generate revenue. And that revenue is what helps, ultimately helps communities when it comes to the budgets that are decided in late June, early July, per se. I might have put the cart before the horse, because you actually brought up a good point here on the national level, because I believe that, that this week we could see a congressional challenge to the election. Do you suspect that could bear any fruit?
No. I mean, if I had to bet money, no. And to be honest with you, I where I am, we've got more than enough to worry about locally. My focus is going to be working with my peers, both Republican and Democrat peers, to, as I said, firm up funding for the North River Commission, make sure the Hanover fireworks is complete. We're going to go forward with the bond bill, where we have funding to get Route 139 by the library, the Hanover Library, and Congregational Church town officers, get that cleaned up, because it's very, very, you know, it's an 1820 design for 2021 traffic. Right. And somebody's going to get hurt over there unless we get it fixed. So those are among my top priorities.
Anything in closing as we wrap up this segment, Dave?
No, well, it's a couple of things. Number one, I alluded to the fact that we've done a great deal of constituent service in terms of helping people, both with unemployment benefits and mass health. And I would be remiss if I didn't recognize my aide, Natalie Ellard, who just does a superb work. Very quiet, very quietly, very competently. And by the way, she's become a mentor to her peers, because she, you know, we now have a number of new aides, and now they go to Natalie to find out how to get things done. So, you know, she is very, very well-respected, and we're very lucky to have her in the district. And I also want to thank, again, the local supporters, and whether or not they voted for me, we will do our best to make sure that we, you know, focus on the well-being in Norwell, Hanover, and Rockland, and get a lot of these issues done. And as Governor Baker always said, we're going to make this a better place for people to live, work, and raise a family.
He has been our guest, the State Representative Dave DeCoste, the first guest of 2021 here on Monday Night Talk. Representative, I'm looking forward to many more conversations with you throughout the year.
Well, hopefully it'll be all good news, Kevin, and happy 2021 to you and everyone listening.
Definitely. All right. We are going to step aside just for a moment. And when we come back, I promise, more Monday Night Talk right here, only at 95.9 WPTV.
If you want a drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, That's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit aa.org.
Dad, you know I'm willing to drive.
Honey, we're all set here.
But your eyes, you even say so yourself, don't like driving at night.
Well, that's why I'm following the plow.
But that's a sander, Dad. You know what they say.
It pays to stay way back.
It pays to stay way back.
Oh!
Too late.
I'm Peter Brown of Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. It pays to stay way back. However, if your windshield is broken, just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Representative David DeCoste and Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15. Here on 95.9 WATD.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Joining us for this particular segment happens to be State Representative Josh Cutler, representing the 6th Plymouth District. It's great to be able to talk to him in the new year. Representative, how are you doing, sir?
I'm great. Happy New Year. Glad it's 2021.
Yeah, how'd you make it to the holidays?
Very, very quiet, just with family. You know, had a nice day. Yesterday, we took a nice hike in the woods and, you know, very quiet, but that's probably how most folks did.
Yeah, I was seeing that we're all supposed to be trying to observe social distancing and not gathering in big groups. Yeah, that's kind of part of the course. Same here. I kind of was low-key.
Yep. No, our big activity. My daughter wanted to watch the new Wonder Woman movie, and so we did that, and, you know, had a nice evening.
Okay. Maybe next time I have you on, we'll do a movie review of Wonder Woman.
I have to admit, I did not watch the whole thing. I was sitting there with my iPad playing games sometimes, so I don't know if I can give you a great review.
No. It's okay. It might be better if you actually devoted your full attention to it, honestly.
Yes.
Let's kind of touch upon some relatively interesting news, knowing that Speaker DeLeo basically stepping away, and there's a new speaker in the House chambers, Speaker Rob Mariano.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I know folks listening and watching may not, you know, that may not be breaking news for them, but, you know, it's a big deal, obviously, for the institution, for the legislature, and for state government, and, you know, the role of speaker has a very influential role on how things, you know, what priorities are set and how those priorities get achieved. So it is a pretty big deal. And it's a pretty big deal. We haven't had a speaker from the South Shore, I went back and checked, since the 1930s. So it's been almost 100 years. So that is pretty neat for, you know, as a region here on the South Shore to have the, you know, the House Speaker, you know, the one of the top three. You know, we can put them, decide what order they go in, but the top three most powerful positions in state government to be here, someone from the South Shore, which is pretty cool. So, but yeah, Speaker DeLeo stepped down. Obviously, he had served for a record-setting period, period of time, 12 years, which I believe is a record, and takes with him, you know, really lengthy and distinguished legacy of policy accomplishments. he's been really great to work with. I think, you know, he's someone who worked well with Democrats and Republicans. I think my Republican colleagues would say similar kinds of things, that he was always very open-minded and willing to listen, somewhat the opposite of what his media caricature sometimes is, and a very easygoing and actually a really, really good sense of humor. So he will certainly be missed, but we're very pleased to have Speaker Mariano taking the reins, and again, to have someone from the South Shore. And I would say, you know, if I could tell a quick story, Kevin, to your listeners. So then Rep Mariano, I was started off my career just out of college. I was working as an aide, first as an intern and then as an aide at the State House. And I met then Rep Mariano, and I forget the particular details, but I invited him. I was living in Hull at the time, and I invited him to come speak to a group of young Democrats to talk about some of the local issues. And to my surprise, he agreed. And, you know, it was outside of his district, but he took the time. And I remember distinctly on a Saturday morning, we had him and he came and visited with us, spent the whole morning with us and gave us, you know, a fascinating discussion about state government and the budget and how it works, took a lot of questions and spent a lot of time with us. And I walked away impressed that someone in that kind of role would take the time to someone who, you know, they didn't represent, but take the time to sit and talk to them. And so that has stuck with me all these years. And now, you know, how many years later, 20 years later, whatever it is, I'm proud to work with him and now to work under his leadership as speaker. And I think he's been someone that I know, and again, I'll say this, I think my Republican colleagues would say the same thing. He's always been very accessible. And when you have a tough issue or something you're really kind of fretting about or, you know, kind of thinking over. And, you know, a lot of times you'll walk up to the third floor and make an appointment with Ron and now Speaker Mariano. And, you know, and he's a great person to kind of be a sounding board and offer good advice. And he has a lot of background on issues, especially in healthcare and education. He was a public school teacher for many years. So he's got a lot of background and depth of knowledge on those issues and really a whole host of range of issues. So it's kind of a new day and an exciting one for us, and looking forward to his leadership.
As a Democrat, how important is it that you have a leader who can be able to work across the aisle? Because we know that on the national level, it's a mere struggle for folks of political parties to be able to work together because they want complete power and complete control. How great is it that this trend is going to continue under Speaker Mariano?
Yeah, I do think that is important, Kevin. I think number one, you see it obviously here, you know, regionally amongst our, you know, you interview all the local South Shore reps, and you know how we all get along. It's not just a show. We do get along. We do like each other. We do work together. It doesn't mean we don't occasionally have our policy differences, but you know, we agree to disagree and move on. And that's what the hallmark of I think here in Massachusetts state government has been. We have the minority leader, Brad Jones, is someone I very much respect. He's been there a long time, and he has the respect of the Democratic members. And, you know, again, we don't always agree, but we find ways to work together when we can. And I know that was a hallmark of Speaker DeLeo's tenure, and I know that will continue under Speaker Mariano, because he is someone that, you know, tries to be a consensus builder. And so that very much is something that I think we should be proud of. And hopefully we can export to Washington, D.C. It seems like I've seen a few improvements, and sometimes they've, you know, there's been some compromises made recently, so that's encouraging news out of DC, and hopefully under President Biden that will get even better. So, but yes,
let's take a moment to do a little house cleaning for
I'll take a moment to have my coffee here.
Absolutely. The closing out to 2020, and the governor as of the past couple of days actually signed into law the police reform bill. I think there are some who are still kind of disenfranchised by the bill because of a couple of provisions. Give me your thoughts on this legislation.
Yeah, I mean, overall, I think it's a good piece of legislation. You know, it's something that's needed, and I think something that's a little bit misunderstood, I think, as well. I think some of the concerns I hear from people, you know, are not things that are in the bill, frankly. And so certainly valid concerns, but not in the bill. For instance, we didn't eliminate qualified immunity. But, you know, really at its core, I think the key cornerstone of this is this, the idea that we're going to have a certification process for law enforcement, like we do for attorneys, doctors, teachers, and many other professions. And, you know, that is sort of the cornerstone of it. 43 or 44 other states have what's called a POST system, police officer standards and trainings, have such a POST system in place already. So this is certainly not new ground. Massachusetts is sort of behind the scenes on that. And so we have implemented a POST system here in Massachusetts. Now we've done so with a civilian-led agency. So that's what makes Massachusetts a little bit different, is that in contrast to what's happened in other states, our POST commission will be primarily civilian-led. And that, you know, that was done purposefully. Now it does include some important voices from law enforcement. And during the sort of legislative process that we went through, you know, if you recall, this was first approved by the House and the Senate way back in the summer, and it had public hearings prior to that. And so there's, you know, a lot of time and attention. And I'll just say, you know, I've been in the legislature now officially 8 years, and there's not a single other issue that we have spent more time or more debate on than police reform. So for folks who say it was pushed along too fast, that is actually the opposite. But in any case, you know, this post system is really the centerpiece of the legislation. There's some other important things as well, setting some limits on the use of chemical sprays, no-knock warrants, chokeholds, things like that. I think that there's pretty broad consensus on. I think, you know, in working with our law enforcement folks, you know, I think for the most part, they mostly agree with all those things. The makeup of the post commission and the issue of qualified immunity got a lot of attention. And those are contentious issues. And I think that's one reason why the legislature chose not to eliminate qualified immunity, because there were some really valid concerns from law enforcement about that. And so we did not take that step. But I think it's a good bill. I think in time, I think our friends in law enforcement will agree as well. You know, I think it's a good step forward for Massachusetts, something we can be proud of to strengthen, frankly, the profession of law enforcement and make everyone, you know, we know the vast majority of our law enforcement are great men and women dedicated to their jobs. And I think this will hopefully strengthen the profession to weed out the small number of quote unquote bad actors that unfortunately we tend to be the ones that we hear about, as there are in any profession. But in law enforcement, obviously, it's more visible.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking with State Representative Josh Cutler. He is my guest for this particular segment. Moving away from the police reform bill, let's talk a little bit about the PANDAS PANS. And these are two different acronyms, Pediatric Autoimmune Neuropsychiatric Disorder Associated. And then the second one, correct me if I'm wrong here, it's pretty much the...
It's very similar. Yeah.
It's pretty much similar. What exactly is this? And I believe that you helped get some legislation.
Thanks, Kevin. This is a pretty big deal for folks who are, you know, facing this. So I had no idea what PANDAS PANS were when I first was elected. And I can recall some parents approaching me to talk to me about this. And I actually attended, at the Windsor House in Duxbury, my first term, a meeting with parents from all over the South Shore. This is a pediatric disease. It's an autoimmune disease that strikes children. And the onset can be sometimes literally overnight. So literally one night, you know, your child is fine. The next night, the child wakes up with some very significant issues. You know, they could be cognitive issues, behavioral issues. It's basically a brain inflammation that occurs. It's not fully understood. I mean, it's there's a lot of research on it. I don't know that we know fully understand how it happens. But it's something that really, for whatever reason, especially here on the South Shore, we've seen a lot of cases of this. And for parents, it can be, you know, obviously the emotional and physical and the health side of this can be really devastating. But the financial side is even, you know, just as bad, because there is treatment. It's called IVIG therapy. It's a form of antibodies that have proven very successful in treating the most severe cases of PANDAS and PANS. And unfortunately, most private insurers refuse to cover that. Now, curiously, MassHealth, our own Commonwealth plan, does cover IVIG. My first term, a meeting with parents from all over the South Shore whose child, this is a pediatric disease. It's an autoimmune disease that strikes children. And the onset can be sometimes literally overnight. So literally one night, your child is fine. The next night, the child wakes up with some very significant issues. You know, they could be cognitive issues, behavioral issues. And it's a basically a brain inflammation that occurs. It's not fully understood. I mean, it's there's a lot of research on it. I don't know that we know fully understand how it happens. But it's something that really, for whatever reason, especially here on the South Shore, we've seen a lot of cases of this. And for parents, it can be, you know, obviously the emotional and physical and the health side of this can be really devastating. But the financial side is even, you know, just as bad, because there is treatments called IVIG therapy. It's a form of antibodies that have proven very successful in treating the most severe cases of PANDAS and PANS. And unfortunately, most private insurers refuse to cover that. Now, curiously, MassHealth, our own Commonwealth plan, does cover IVIG.
It's very much, pretty similar. I believe that exactly is this legislation. You helped get some.
Thanks, Kevin. This is a big deal for folks. This is a pretty big, you know, fix who are. I had no idea facing this. So, PANS were when I had no idea what PANS was, and I can recall first was Alexis approaching all some parents to talk to me about me. They attended this, and I actually had a house in Duxbury. I think in the winter term, immediately, my first from all over the South being with parents whose children, sure, pediatric disease. This is a pediatric disease that strikes, it's an autoimmune disease, and it children that can be sometimes the onset overnight. So, literally over, you know, really one night on the next night that your child is fine. With child wakes up, significant, some very issues, cognitive issues, but, you know, they could be behavioral issues. It's a, and it's brain inflammation, basically a brain, it's that occurs. I mean, it's not fully under research on it. There's a lot of research fully understand. I don't know that we know, but and how it happens. It really, it's something, especially here on the, for whatever reason, we've seen, I'm sure we're seeing cases of this, a lot of, and for, you know, obviously the parents, it can be physical and the emotional and physical side of this health dating. Can be really devastating side is even the financials is bad because, you know, just there is treatments, you know, the IG therapy called IVI form of P. It's a phase antibody proven very successful that have been the most successful in treating of PANDAS and beer cases and for PANS. Private insurers, actually most price to cover that refuse. Now curious that MassHealth, the Commonwealth, our cover plan does. It's very IVI. Yeah.
It's pretty much similar. What exactly is this? And I believe that you helped get some legislation.
Thanks, Kevin. This is a pretty big deal for folks who are, you know, facing this. So I had no idea what PANDAS were when I first was elected. And I can recall some parents approaching me to talk to me about this. And I actually attended, I think, in the Windsor House in Duxbury, my first term, a meeting with parents from all over the South Shore. This is a pediatric disease. It's an autoimmune disease that strikes children. And the onset can be sometimes literally overnight. So literally one night, you know, your child is fine. The next night, the child wakes up with some very significant issues. You know, they could be cognitive issues, behavioral issues. And it's a basically a brain inflammation that occurs. It's not fully understood. I mean, it's there's a lot of research on it. I don't know that we know fully understand how it happens. But it's something that really, for whatever reason, especially here on the South Shore, we've seen a lot of cases of this. And for parents, it can be, you know, obviously the emotional and physical and the health side of this can be really devastating. But the financial side is even, you know, just as bad because there is treatments called IVIG therapy. It's a form of antibodies that have proven very successful in treating the most severe cases of PANDAS and PANS. And unfortunately, most private insurers refuse to cover that. Now, curiously, MassHealth, our own Commonwealth plan, does cover IVIG.
It's very much. Yeah. What is similar? I believe that exactly is this legislation. You helped get some.
Thanks, Kevin. This is a big deal for folks. This is a pretty big, you know, fix who are. I had no idea facing this. So, PANS were when I had no idea what PANDAS was, and I can recall first was Alexis approaching all some parents to talk to me about me. They attended this, and I actually had a house in Duxbury. I think in the winter term, immediately, my first from all over the South being with parents whose children, sure, pediatric disease. This is a pediatric disease that strikes, it's an autoimmune disease, and it children that can be sometimes the onset overnight. So, literally over, you know, really one night on the next night that your child is fine. With child wakes up significant some very issues cognitive issues, but, you know, they could be behavioral issues. It's a it's brain inflammation, basically a brain it's that occurs. I mean, it's not fully under research on it. There's a lot of research fully understand. I don't know that we know, but and how it happens. It really it's something, especially here on the for whatever reason we've seen, I'm sure we're seeing cases of this, a lot of and for, you know, obviously the parents, it can be physical and the emotional and physical side of this health devastating. It can be really devastating. Is even the financial side. Dad,
FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD.
What is AA? Alcoholics Anonymous is an international fellowship of men and women who've had a drinking problem.
It is non-professional and self-supporting.
AA is multiracial, apolitical, and available almost everywhere.
There are no age or education requirements. Membership is open to anyone who wants to do something about their drinking problem.
Call 617-426-9444 or find online meetings at aa-intergroup.org.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Hi, I'm Patricia Seuss from the Animal Protection Center of Southeastern Mass in Brockton. Our small nonprofit animal shelter has served Plymouth, Norfolk, and Bristol counties over the past 11 years. Our mission is to operate as an open admission animal care and adoption facility with focus on prevention of cruelty to animals, education, and outreach. Please go to our website, apcsm.org. Thank you, and please continue to support nonprofit organizations on the South Shore.
Invest your time in listening to Cape Retirement Radio and learn a smarter approach to investing so you can protect your future. Cape Retirement Radio, featuring Chris Letond, Thursday nights at 6:15 and Sunday mornings at 10 on 95.9 WATD. Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Here we are, hour number two of Monday Night Talk. And what a great way to kick off the second hour as we speak with Brockton City Councilor, Councilor at Large, Wynn Falwell, joins us to talk about the City Council, the City of Brockton, take a little look back at 2020, some of the things that were kind of relevant in the year 2020, other than COVID, and maybe even take a little peek ahead. Councilor, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I hope you had a great holiday. Always a pleasure to join you, and here we are, ready to embrace another year.
What's unfortunate, because of COVID, we were not traditionally, over the past few years, you and many of your counselor, your colleagues on the council, would find your way to Marshfield, and we would have, one, two, three city councilors sit in, and we would have a good, hearty conversation about the city. We had varying opinions and, thoughts on, whatever the particular topic is that dealt with the city of Brockton. I'm hoping that in 2021, we can return to that form as long as we're not battling COVID and that we're not all wearing masks like we have to do right now.
Well, I agree. The virus changed so many things in government and in politics, just in relationships with the media and with other people. Yes, you can conduct meetings and you can get business done by using Zoom, but government should be, and I hope we return to it, a more personal relationship with people, having people appear before you in person and having an interaction. And it just seems somewhat detached, even as you and I are talking, it just seems somewhat detached to depend upon technology. So I'm hoping with vaccinations and with the reduction in COVID cases in Massachusetts and in the Brockton region, we'll get back to a different normal. I never think that we will go back to what it used to be. I think there'll be a degree of caution in whatever we do, but it really has profoundly affected what we do and how we do it.
As a member of the city council, what was the past year like for you and for your colleagues on the city dealing with, besides, I mean, we could talk about COVID and how it had an effect on doing business as a government body, but as a whole in regards to doing business as a city of Brockton, what was the year like for the city council?
Well, boy, that is a... you and I could spend a lifetime analyzing that. But let me start with just how this COVID initiated the changes. We were fine through January, February, and the first week in March.
Yeah.
And then it was all of a sudden, it's like being in the middle of an event, and there's a huge timeout, and the governor says, we're not going to allow children back on campus. We're changing everything that we're doing, and we go into a pandemic mode of operation. And it was abrupt. It was really without any significant prior thought or planning. And that really raised challenges for the mayor, for the city council, for the school committee, the school superintendent, but most importantly, for our residents, and especially for parents of school-age children, and the learning process, and the staff in the schools. So I would say the abrupt change from normal to operating within a pandemic setting was pretty shocking. I don't think that's hyping up the definition. But after that, you had to kind of say, all right, listen, it's here, so let's see how well we can do what we're doing. So I think the mayor convened a group of people, emergency management people, medical people, and said, we've got to make sure that we do everything we can for our residents. And that involved bringing in PPE for hospital staff, nursing home staff, keeping the city council informed as to what was going on, bringing on Dr. Richard Herman, Rick Herman, as a medical consultant, which really yielded such dividends for us to have someone that we could turn to and say, look, we think we know what's going on, but tell us from a medical perspective what's going on. And I can't emphasize enough how I think everyone pulled together and has done the best job they can, and we will be better prepared. Maybe not in my lifetime it will happen. There'll be another pandemic. There'll be another public health challenge thrown our way, and we will be much better informed, much better prepared, probably have a lot of materials stockpiled, have policies and procedures that have been reduced to writing that will make it very much easier than it was this time around.
I think the one aspect of our conversations, especially when it's dealing with the city of Brockton, is that you have worn so many different hats when it comes to city government. You served as mayor, you were elected as mayor, elected as a school committee, now as a member of the city council. What goes through your mind as somebody who has had this experience and seeing new people come on board? You saw a new mayor at the beginning of the year. You saw new members of the city council and the school committee. What goes through your mind as someone who has this experience and wonders, you know, how it is to come on board and have a pandemic strike at such an untimely point of life, especially when things are starting to take shape for city government?
It may sound odd to say this, but I'm afraid my experiences were a blessing, but they were also a curse. Let's start with police department experience. I knew once we reached a pandemic level where we were concerned about the infection rate, my first thought was for the police officers, firefighters, and emergency medical personnel who are going to be on the front line, and they're going to be exposed to it. And so what effect will it have on them and their families? Will we have, for example, wholesale groups of people who unfortunately come down with COVID? And then because I served on the school committee, my next where he was, the school staff, the school superintendent. I know how disruptive it is when you have school-age children to suddenly say to parents they're not going to be able to go to school, because now you've put the burden on the parents to completely change their family schedule, maybe not even be able to go to work and earn a living because they now have little ones, especially from kindergarten through sixth grade, that absolutely have to have supervision and someone has to be home with them. And then I turn to thinking about the mayor who had just been sworn into office. And even though Bob had served many, many years on the city council, you do not know that job until you've been there. You cannot imagine the complexity of being mayor, even in a small city like Brockton. So I knew he was immediately going to be worried with all of the issues that I would worry about, and finances. Will we have the revenues to do what we need to do for our people? What effect will the virus have on the state revenues and the level of state aid we would receive? So, you know, it's no hyperbole at all. There were sleepless nights because I wasn't quite sure where we were going and how easily we could get there, if we could get there at all. But the one thing I knew is that I had a lot of other people worrying the same way. So I guess challenges and misery loves company.
What would you say were some of the top agenda items during 2020 that your governing body had to tackle?
I think the first one I would say was finding out the level of aid that we would have, what revenues would we have to put together the fiscal year 21 budget so that we could at least maintain the level of services that we have now, police, fire, schools, emergency services, libraries, health department, building department, collector treasurer, all of the different things that are really required of any municipality. The next one was we had some marijuana licenses that had to be evaluated and decisions had to be made as to whether to grant or not grant them. We got through that. But then I think it really turned on trying to adjust to this Zoom mode of operation. We were in council chamber and then we weren't. Then we were able to go back for a little while. And then unfortunately with the warm weather, we had the rate of infection go up. So we had to go back to Zoom meetings. And it really is very disruptive. It's difficult to hear everyone because of the technology. And it's especially hard to interact with the public on a personal basis when you have to do everything through technology.
Do you feel that at least having the technology, like having a Zoom, at least made it possible? You think back when you were mayor or when you served on the school committee, you know, would there have been a Zoom if the pandemic struck then? Did we have the technology then like we do today, you know?
No, we wouldn't. Back then, we'd be lucky to have a conference call with a speakerphone.
Right.
So I do think Zoom is better than not having the technology at all. But in a governmental setting, the interaction between people, not only in a governmental body, whether it's the city council, the school committee, the zoning board of appeals, the planning board, and then having citizens come before you to advance a particular issue, when that has to be done through technology, there is something lost in that interaction. And I'm not saying it's a fatal flaw, but it just completely changes the way you ordinarily conduct business.
You're just tuning in. You're tuned into Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD, and we have the privilege of talking to Brockton at-large counselor. Wynn Falwell is our guest, and we're kind of doing a little bit of a year of review, and you know, with the city of Brockton, the city council, and also kind of looking ahead through the eyes of somebody who was a longtime Brockton resident, somebody who served served law enforcement very well, and then returned to city government. So I guess what I'm going to do now is, you mentioned marijuana, and I know that as when I was doing reporting for the city of Brockton, one of the last bastions of conversation I remember was the thought that there was going to be marijuana sales, whether it be someone manufacturing it, and we're talking on the adult recreation side, not the medical side, is kind of progressed to now retail sales, and the city council and the city having outlets for folks to come and purchase it. How was 2020 different from 2019 in making any progress with having recreational marijuana in the city?
Well, you had already enacted business regulations. You had already enacted zoning regulations. So now it was an opportunity for people to come before the city council and with their application to become a retail marijuana distributor. And fortunately, I think we did a good job on the business regulations. I think they can be tweaked a little bit in the coming year. But there was always that thought, A, will it be as successful as everyone is predicting it will be? And B, how can we make sure that those businesses that are selected are successful? Because the city does have a vested interest in these. We obtain revenue from the sales of product. So we wanted to make sure that we selected someone or an entity that would have the financial and management experience to be successful. But because it was a new industry and because it's still illegal at the federal level, although I think that will change, there was a great deal of thought about what will the effect be on public safety services, neighborhood services, how will we make sure that these businesses get integrated into the city with a minimal amount of disruption or negative impact. And so a great deal of thought went into that and still goes into that. I will feel better when we have some businesses up and running and we have a couple of years of data as to revenues that they've brought in, revenues that have been provided to the city, and any issues that may arise in neighborhoods or sections of the city that required the attention of city government. Because right now I'm really operating without any of that data. I can look elsewhere, but I don't think you should compare Brockton with a city in Colorado or Brockton with Boston. We're unique, the demographics are unique. So I'd like to get a baseline on where will we be a couple of years after these businesses open for the city of Brockton.
Would you say it's been a smooth transition to not only the acceptance of having adult recreational marijuana, having an outlet that would produce it, but then also a retail outlet to sell it? Has it been a smooth road, or have there been a few bumps along the way?
Oh, there have been some bumps along the way. There remained allegedly no licenses available. And then the city solicitor opined in public that there might be a license remaining. That is still to be determined, because if you assume she's right and she isn't, and you give out a license, you violated your own ordinances. If you assume she's wrong and don't give out a license, then have you been prejudicial towards an applicant or applicants? So one of my colleagues, Councilor Jeff Thompson, made a motion the other evening to ask for declaratory judgment, which is a fancy way of saying, let's put this question before a Superior Court judge, take a look at the law, take a look at the ordinances, and make a decision. And in that way, and I'm not speaking for Jeff, but I think he thought that by having a neutral, independent outside party make the decision, no, whatever the decision might be, no one could claim that it was tainted in any way by either local politics or personal preferences. So that's where we are. We are going to have a request for a declaratory judgment on whether the city of Brockton has a remaining license. And we'll see how that goes. I mean, it's...
I think it's interesting that Councilor Thompson, who is a practicing attorney, would call for such action. It's a rather smart move, and I think it would alleviate any issues or improprieties on the city council's end if they just went with, what was advised initially.
Well, Yes, and I think he did a service by doing that. The problem is, speaking frankly, which sometimes gets me into great difficulty, there is a group or a segment of the population that thinks that because there was a pending minority applicant, that this was done somehow in a biased way. And I can tell you, Kevin, and I know all of the 11 counselors, we don't always vote together. Some I'm more friendly with than others, but I can tell you they're colorblind. They do not look at an issue with respect to either a person, an applicant, or whoever is before us in a way that would be affected by cultural, racial, sexual orientation, gender, or any other way. So it bothers me, and that's the way I am. I mean, if you call me, I have no idea who you are on the other end of the phone. I'll help you in any way I can. But it bothers me that sometimes these issues get reduced to allegations of, well, you're doing this for other than the right motives. And I mean, I would call someone out if I thought that they were being discriminatory. I have no problem doing that, because that's not what government should be about. Everyone should be treated fairly.
So it appears that 2021 will be a continuance of this particular issue to see if there's clarity on that license, if it's available, per se.
Yes, I would say that's an accurate summary of where we'll be for a while.
Okay. And again, if you are just tuning in, you're tuned into Monday Night Talk, heard here only on 95.9 WATD, and joining us is Brockton at-large counselor, city councilor, Wynn Farwell. I want to kind of move things forward and talk a little bit about capital projects and economic development in the city, which I think is going to be important in the new year. One of the projects that I know that has long been sought after was to build a new police station. I think it has evolved over the past few years to be more of a hub for services, not just for police, but maybe fire, maybe team up with the DA's office as well. Where do things stand in regards to maybe a public safety complex in the near future?
Many months ago, it was decided that we needed a new public safety facility. And the thought was, why not have a public safety campus where you could combine police and fire? And then the mayor wisely added in information technology and the Brockton Emergency Management Agency departments all in one location. Now, if you're going to have a downtown location, it's got to be in an area that's of sufficient size. And number two, the downtown central fire station has to be in that location, because apparatus in the city are designed to handle a specific geographical area within a certain response time. And so the thinking was, okay, fortunately, Brockton Fire and Police and Emergency Management and IT, they all get along. There's no rivalries. Let's look at where we can do this and how we can do it. So a committee was formed. From there, an owner's property management representative firm was selected. And then an architectural firm was selected. We've had about 22 or 23 meetings. Councilor Azak is council president. Was on that committee, as I was, and we've now reached the point where we're looking at about a $98 million maximum, it may come in a little less, $98 million public safety campus in the downtown area that will provide modern, friendly, handicapped accessible facilities for the police department, the fire department, Brockton Emergency Management Agency, and our information technology department. And it's pretty exciting. I mean, it will be something that will last a minimum 50 years and will be designed so that if you had to expand it, you could. But at least for now, it will house the agencies that need to be in the downtown area, and I think will greatly augment economic development in the downtown area.
How important is that the ongoing revitalization of the downtown corridor? We know that it has been an ongoing effort, you know, starting back with Linda Balzotti's administration and continuing on through the succession of mayors, for it to be yet another piece to making Brockton, you know, the renewal of a city like Brockton.
I think having the DA's office downtown with the troopers coming and going, the downtown courthouse with police from all different communities that are part of Brockton District Court coming and going, and having the police station in the downtown area, it will enhance people's feeling of safety and security. And I've always said that if you want to develop the downtown area, you've got to give people a feeling that they can come down, park their vehicle, go to a restaurant, go to a business, participate in some activity, and be assured that they will be safe and secure. And I think this is going to go a long way towards doing that. And obviously, time will tell. But again, having a new, hopefully constructed by 2023 project, it's really going to be a beacon of progress that Brockton has made. We've turned the corner, and we're doing something that will be beneficial for decades to come.
What are your thoughts in regards to economic development coming into the new year? I mean, how do you start the year off right? Are there any conversations taking place as to hopefully see the light at the end of the tunnel, knowing that there's vaccines available, and hopefully by summer everybody will have access to getting vaccinated, that this could help the city kickstart the economic development boom that it was trying to prior to the pandemic?
I think the first step will be for the mayor and the director of planning and economic development to somehow do a needs assessment or to survey businesses that are already in the city and ask them, are you going to be able to survive the pandemic? I mean, how badly have you been hurt? We know that you've been suffering, and we know that revenues have been down. So tell us how government can help. Is there anything we can do? Networking with our state legislative delegation and our congressional delegation. Then I think we need to look at economic development beyond just the downtown urban renewal project and the Trout Brook urban renewal project. I have a personal goal of trying to bring in businesses that generate jobs in the next 1 to 5 years. The problem with economic development that takes 15 or 20 years is that it doesn't really address an immediate need. And people in Brockton need jobs. Young people need jobs to help pay their expenses for their college education, whether they go away to school, whether they go to Massasoit or Bridgewater State University. So that's my personal goal. But I think the city's goal should be, and I will certainly lobby the mayor on this, let's see what we can do in the next 1 to 5 years. Can we bring in light manufacturing? Can we attract new businesses that might have been spawned by the virus? Manufacturing protective equipment, cleaning services, manufacturing disinfectants that could be used by people. I mean, I think there is an opportunity in certain areas of the city where we could locate businesses and generate some jobs, and that would really meet one of my goals.
We got 2 or 3 minutes left here to wrap up. Anything in closing, maybe that we haven't touched upon during our conversation, but it feels kind of vital to putting a nice bow on this conversation, looking forward to the next 360 odd days?
I would say we've learned a lot in the last year. It was thrust upon us, maybe not by desire, but we've learned a lot. I think we've learned how to help as much as we can as a government, a municipal government. I know the mayor is committed to taking this next year and doing all he can to help drive down the rate of infection for the virus, get the vaccinations out. Matter of fact, they've already bought refrigeration units for vaccine, so they were ahead of that curve. Get people back to normal, especially with our schools. If there were one thing that I wish I could do, if I could wave a magic wand, it would be able to get us back to a point where we get our young people back in school. That will stabilize families, let mothers and dads go back to their routine schedule, and get the kids back interacting with our staff. Because through everything that's happened in this city, and I've been around a long while, the one diamond in the rough, the one golden opportunity, was the Brockton Public Schools. And I just hope we can get there sooner rather than later.
Well, I thank you for taking time out of your schedule to chat with us here. at Monday Night Talk, and look forward to hopefully more fruitful conversations in the new year.
Well, happy new year to you and the staff and to your missus, and especially to the animals, because people don't know you and I are diehard animal lovers. They run the house. I hope I'm not outing us, but dogs run the house. So
they absolutely do. It goes without saying, honestly. It's on their schedule, not ours.
So many good wishes to you, Kevin. Thank you for having me on it.
You as well, sir. And we're going to step aside for a couple of moments when we come back. Our final segment of Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Erin Fitzpatrick with the Friends of the Marshfield Dog Park. Our mission is to create a safe place for dogs to play and exercise off-leash. We will be located on Commerce Way up behind Roach Brothers. To get involved or to make a donation, please visit our website at friendsofthemarshfielddogpark.com or on our Facebook page, Friends of the Marshfield Dog Park. Thank you, and please continue to support the amazing nonprofit organizations on the South Shore.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Be a part of the show. Call in and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Our guest for this segment happens to be the chairman of the Plymouth County Democratic League. He is Alex Bezant, and he has been on as a guest with me many times, regardless of the media outlet. Alex, how are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great, Kevin. Happy New Year.
Yeah, I was going to say, you made it into 2021 safe and unharmed.
Yeah, so far.
How do you feel knowing that here we are, we're in a new year, politically, looking back, now that you can kind of look in the rearview mirror, give me your thoughts on 2020 politically. How do you feel it went?
It was, it just kind of fit the year. It was bizarre. The whole year was bizarre for so many reasons, with COVID, with shutdowns, politically. You know, the country is so divided right now. And I'm hoping this week after Congress finally votes and certifies the Electoral College that we can all start to try and get along again. But, you know, you have the hardcore supporters of the president, and they just don't seem to want to give up. Supreme Court, court judges, Barr have all said there's no big conspiracy here, and I don't think there is. I just hope that the whole country will kind of, you know, just start to try and work together. You might not like Joe Biden, you might not like Vice President-elect Kamala Harris, but let's give them a shot, you know? Let's give them a shot and see what they can do. It'll be interesting to see what happens in Georgia this week. That will decide a lot of what's going to happen in Washington over the next couple of years.
You touch upon nationally, but how about as far as state and local elections in 2020. What were your thoughts? Do you feel it was also equally as chaotic? Or do you feel it was smooth?
I think it was. Some of the state rep races, we spoke about this shortly after the election. Some of the state rep races down in Plymouth County got really, really nasty. And I don't think it was necessary on anyone's part. I mean, Josh Cutler ended up winning every precinct, and his opponent and her supporters tried everything they could to throw at him, and he still won every precinct. Kathy Lenatra did well. Tom O'Brien did well, and that was another campaign that was a one-sided, very negative campaign that it didn't need to be. And I think the people see through some of that stuff, and they don't like it. And I'm glad the results were what they were. And like I said last time when we spoke, you know, anyone's entitled to run, and I encourage people to run, whether you're Democrat, Independent, or Republican. But tell the truth, do your research, and run a campaign on the issues. When I ran for state rep, I lost, as you know, back in 2018, but neither myself or my opponent, Representative Sullivan, attacked each other. And I would never do that. I don't believe she would do that. I just think this some of these state rep races got nastier than they should have.
It isn't a matter of that when you start seeing new wrinkles in political parties, and the wrinkles are trying to inject you know, some kind of a new element that'll hopefully energize the base or energize the party, could have an adverse effect?
And I think that's exactly what's happening. I mean, we have that in the Republican Party, and we have that in the Democratic Party right now. Ron Mariano was just elected a Speaker of the House last week. And, you know, there was a big push by progressives that wanted a black representative or a more progressive representative to be Speaker. And luckily, it went smoothly there. But that could have been another nasty fight. And I think everyone realized that wasn't in the best interest of the Democratic Party. But I think you're seeing that more and more in both parties, not just the far left Democrats, but you have the far right Republicans also. My feeling always has been, and I believe this, that most people in this country are either just right or just left of center. But we have the far left minority and the far right minority who are the ones that are stealing the headlines. So hardcore Democrats blame Republicans for everything that the hardcore left right is doing, and the same on the Democratic side. And that's not the case. It's just that they're the ones that are making the news. They're the ones that the press is covering, and it's not right. And that's not how most people in this country feel.
If you're tuning in, we're speaking with Alex Bezanson. Alex is not only the chairman of the Plymouth County Democratic League, he also is an elected official. He is Abington selectman, vice chair of the Board of Selectmen in Abington. It's interesting, you brought up newly elected Massachusetts House Speaker, House of Representatives Speaker, Rob Mariano. Talk to me about the transition from Speaker DeLeo to Mariano.
I'm fortunate enough to have met and know both of them a little bit. I knew Speaker DeLeo somewhat. He was helpful during my campaign, as was Ron Mariano. I don't think you're going to see a big change. I think they're both more moderate Democrats, I think. But Representative Mariano did say this week that, you know, he wants to include more progressives in leadership roles, which I think he should. He wants to look into more legislation for green legislation, and I think he should. So I think he's willing to listen, and I think you'll see some changes going a little more progressive with Representative Mariano than you did with Speaker DeLeo.
Knowing that, you know, you have a caucus in order to be able to choose your leader for your particular party, or for, you know, if you have a majority, you're able to choose for the lead in that branch of government. My understanding is that Mariano was also a favorite among Republicans in the House too.
I think so. I haven't spoken to anyone about that, but I think he's a very well liked and very intelligent state representative. You know, people talk about term limits and everything, but, you know, you don't get the knowledge with a freshman or a two-term representative that you get with someone like a representative or Speaker Mariano. or DeLeo, or even a Josh Cutler that I think is in his fourth term now. You know, I mean, it takes time to know the ropes. And that's even true with selectmen. I feel much better equipped to be a selectman this time than when I was elected in 2015. I know better how the system works. I know what we can and can't do. The selectmen don't have an awful lot of power in a town with a strong town manager, more policy based. But there's a learning curve there, just like any job. And I think, you know, we're fortunate to have some of these state representatives that have been in there for several years and know the ins and outs of everything. Union Point would not have had that new parkway if it wasn't for Representative Mariano. So, I mean, there's things like that that the average person might not know, all the work that the reps and senators do. You know, right here on this radio station, there's someone that goes on every once in a while and says, you know, the state reps worked for 1 hour and 3 minutes this week or whatever. That's not true. Mm. These state reps work 24 hours a day. They might not be in the state house all the time, but their phone is ringing constantly. They're doing office hours. They're working on mass health issues, heat issues, and rent issues, and medical issues for all their constituents. So, you know, my hat's off to them. It's a tough job. It really is.
And it's also worth noting that I think their job was the folks who are elected and who either remotely reported into Beacon Hill or did travel once a week. You know, my privilege to be able to talk to many of them and hear from all of them was that it seemed as though they're working three times as hard because, you know, they may be up in the early in the morning and they would be dealing with constituent issues. Their offices were working just as hard, their aides, and, you know, it was a team effort to help people in need during this pandemic. And they would work late into the night where normally maybe they'd go up in the morning and they would leave later on in the day, you know, maybe late afternoon, early evening. That wasn't the case. It was, if anything, it seemed as though they were working harder and there was no complaint. If anything, it was a source of pride that they were trying to do as much as they could for the people they represented.
I think Michelle Dubois stated at one point that she worked on over 100 unemployment cases for people in her district. That's a lot of time. If you ever try calling the unemployment office, especially during a pandemic like this, you know, you need someone like your state rep, your state senator to help you with that.
Looking ahead to 2021 now, it's basically an off year. I call it an off year, tongue in cheek year, because we don't have a presidential primary, an election to deal with. We don't have a state primary or election, but you have other communities that are going to be having elections. You always have your smaller towns have their annual elections, and some of the gateway cities and communities have their elections, their city or community elections. Any that you're watching or paying attention to in general?
Well, we're just getting started on that. Plymouth County Democratic League had an executive board meeting last week, and that was obviously one of the topics that we'll be reaching out to all the Democratic town committee chairs in the next couple of weeks. The nomination papers for a lot of towns are available now. They become available the first Monday after the new year. And I know in Abington, Tim Chapin has already announced that he will seek re-election, which I think is a great thing for the town of Abington, although he's not a Democrat. But he has done a tremendous job as chairman and vice chairman last year before I got on. And surprisingly, and I don't mean any disrespect to Tim, but surprisingly to me, he is extremely knowledgeable about the way the town runs. And he's been an excellent chairman this past year. So I do wish him the best of luck. Abington's fortunate to have him. Jim Conley has announced that he will not be seeking re-election. So Abington will have an open seat for the Board of Selectmen. So it'll be interesting to see who pulls papers for that. I've talked to a couple of people, and one has told me he's decided he is not going to run, and another one has told me he is going to run, but I will wait for him to make the announcement. I won't do that on here. But I think I'm actually hoping that there's not a big slate again this year in Abington. Last year we had five people running, and like I've said before, everyone's entitled to run, but you know, five is kind of a lot to run for selectmen. There's seats open on the Board of Health this year. A longtime member, Linda Dickey, who was a member of the Democratic Town Committee. I haven't spoken to her. I don't know if she's going to run for re-election. And I'm sure all the towns are in a similar situation as Abington. We're just starting to do our research now and find out where we can help town committees. And we'll be reaching out to them, like I said, over the next couple of weeks to do that.
Well, I know that the major community, or the largest community, meaning the city of Brockton, I know that they have their city elections this coming year. That ought to be interesting. And the fact is that your mayor and the people who are sitting on the board's school committee, city council, your mayor, within less of 100 days of coming into office, had to deal with a pandemic. And how interesting is it that you know you're running, and they're probably gonna have to start announcing and running as hopefully we're gonna see the light at the end of the tunnel for COVID. What kind of a task is that gonna be for a community like Brockton?
Well, it's difficult, and I believe Bob Sullivan has already said that he will be running again, which is no surprise. I supported him last time, and we'll definitely support him again. Unfortunately, for somebody like Bob and the counselors, during this past year, during this pandemic, they would have been holding fundraisers and doing meet and greet and doing town hall type meetings and stuff, and they haven't been able to do that. And Zoom is great, but it's not the same as shaking hands with somebody and actually sitting down and having a conversation with them, which you can do at your fundraiser. You can sit with this person for 5 minutes and another one if they have personal questions and answer it. And it's made it very difficult. But that being said, it's made it very difficult for everyone, not just the incumbents. But, you know, going into this year, I don't know. I haven't heard of anyone else that's going to be running against Bob Sullivan, but I'm sure there will be. And I'm sure, you know, there'll be some new people running for city council and council at large again also over there. I'm not a big fan of the two-year cycle. I think the mayor should be 4 years. I think the city council should be 4 years. Quincy switched the mayor to 4 years a few years ago. Mayor Koch is now, I believe, in his second four-year term. He started out as a two-year term. And I think that makes more sense. It's just kind of difficult to concentrate on the city matters and concentrate on running for re-election, because you're always running. The same with state reps and the state senators.
Well, I know that it was the early 90s that the city of Brockton made the switch from a four-year to a two-year term. I believe Win Falwell was the last mayor who had a four-year term, I believe. And then they decided to make the switch, and then you had Jack Unitz, who actually was successful five elections in a row. But right. If you were doing it in four-year cycles, he would have been in office for 20 years. But with the way it was restructured, he got five terms, but he's only in office for 10 years.
Right.
Very interesting.
Yeah, I still think the four-year term is a better system. I think you can really dig in and start working if you don't have to worry about running for re-election.
Right.
And like I said, I believe that for state senators and state reps also, but I don't see that changing anytime soon. And congressmen, I mean, look at the congressmen. Indeed. You know, they're barely into Washington and they're up for re-election again.
Right. But yet you have an oblong term for someone who is a U.S. senator.
Yeah.
Very odd.
Yeah, it is.
If you're just tuning in, we are speaking with Alex Bezanson, not only an Abington selectman, but also he is the chairman of the Plymouth County Democratic League, helping to get word and to help campaigns who are looking to run for office, and is kind enough to sit down and talk from time to time with me about what's going on with the party and with politics in general. Looking at here, we're entering not only a new term for state reps and state senators, but it's the second half of the legislative session for constitutional offices like the governor, the lieutenant governor, the attorney general, the auditor, etc. Looking at the governor's race, is it too early to look at the governor's race right now? And do we know Charlie's going to run again?
Well, I have some thoughts on that. I don't think it's too early. I think if somebody's going to run, they're going to make an announcement fairly soon. Over the next 6 to 9 months, I would think we'll start hearing some people announce they're running for governor or some of the other constitutional offices. My theory is that I don't believe Governor Baker will run again, and I don't have any inside knowledge of that. It's just my feeling. I think Karen Bellito will probably run, but we also have a former state rep right here in the 7th district that I think might jump in the race. I've seen some news reports about that, as everyone else. And personally, I think he'd have a good shot at taking the Republican nomination. And here's why. A lot of the Republicans are unhappy with the way Governor Baker has handled the COVID and shutting down the restaurants and businesses. And I think it's going to be tough for either Baker or Pulido to win the primary where it's just Republicans voting. I think the more the independent and Democrats, if it were the general election, I could see Baker or Pulido getting some Democrat and independent votes from the, the right-leaning Democrats or independents. So going into the primary, I would not be surprised to see Jeff Deal do very well in the primary. He's got a good name. You know, he ran against Elizabeth Warren, and he's well-known throughout the state. And I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, I definitely think he would do well, especially here on the South Shore. He does have name recognition, and he's synonymous with when we initially had the gas tax, that bill, and had the ballot question of being, you know, on the side to fight for the, instead of, you know, us seeing automatic incremental raises to the gas tax. He was one of the folks out who campaigned, and they were successful. He could forever hang his hat on that. It was a David versus Goliath situation with the money that was being spent. But the thing is what if Governor Baker does say he wants to run for a third term? Does he still have staying power, or do you feel that a Jeff Deal or another name could end up being picked over him?
I think if Governor Baker were to run, I would think he would win the primary. If it's an open seat, I think Jeff Deal definitely has a better shot. Because the Republicans are going to vote Republican in the primary. Mm. And if it's the incumbent, I think they're going to lean with the incumbent, even if they're not totally happy with them. I think Jeff would have a better shot of beating Pulido in the primary than he would Baker. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Like you said, he will do very well in south of Boston. Indeed. Than he did last time.
So we just got a couple of minutes left here in our conversation. And again, Alex, I want to thank you, but I can't step aside from this conversation and wrap it up without us at least touching upon the events of the next couple of days and the swearing in of a new president. We know that we could see a move by Congress when it comes to the electoral vote to certify the vote from November 3rd. What are your thoughts in regards to, are we going to see a ruckus when it comes to those votes in the Electoral College, what they have to say? Or do you feel that it's going to be a smooth transition to January 20th when we see a new president sworn in with vice president?
I don't think it's going to be smooth, and that's on Wednesday, I believe.
Yep.
I think we have a few congressmen that are saying they're going to contest it. And from what the research I've done, if someone does contest it, I guess they split up and go, the Congress representatives go in one room and the senators go in another room, maximum 2-hour time frame, and they discuss it and they vote on whether or not they're going to accept it. These people that are continually saying that there was a widespread conspiracy, I just don't see it. The Supreme Court, the federal judges, the attorney general, are they all involved in this conspiracy?
Ooh.
You know, it just doesn't make sense at this point. Was there voter fraud? I don't know, but I would assume there is. I would assume there is voter fraud in all elections, some intentionally, some not intentionally. But was there enough to swing this election? Absolutely not. And if the Democrats were that smart to do this, they would have had a decisive victory. They would have got Mitch McConnell out. They wouldn't have lost any congressional seats. So I don't think there was a widespread conspiracy to elect Joe Biden. And I think at the end of the day, on Wednesday, I think Joe Biden will be our president, waiting to be sworn in.
Anything you want to say to wrap up, in closing, to wrap up our program here?
Well, just thank you for having me again. It's always a pleasure to be on WATD. And yeah, let's talk some more as the year goes on. There's always exciting news in politics.
Well, it's time for us to step aside for the evening. We thank you for tuning in. Fear not, we'll be back next week at 6:15 p.m. Until then, have yourself a great night.